Welcome back to another episode of the Black Art Podcast with me, Lloyd.
Me, Jake.
And a special guest.
Me, Adam.
Adam Dadswell in the building, everybody. So hyped to have you as our second guest on the show.
Yeah, thank you for having me.
No, thank you for being here, dude. Honestly, it's a pleasure to have you. And really quickly, we were just saying, just before we started recording, we're not going to bother saying how was your week and all the boring stuff. We're going to get straight into the gist of it. But could you tell everyone that may not have heard of you sort of what you're into, what style of magic or mentalism you
represent? Glad you said magic and mentalism on the end.
That's yeah, funny. I know.
yeah, I was like, ask Jake. No, it's fine. Started off really close-up magic, predominantly cards, I would say. Kind of got into magic through reading The Royal Road. And that was kind of like my entry into magic. And I think I'm quite a logical thinker. So I think what immediately was the thing that attracted me was how clever certain things were and just knowing these little secrets that other people didn't. So that was kind of my way into it. But I think it's fair to say kind of as time has gone by and as I've become kind of more well-read, I guess, like as a rounded topic of magic, I've discovered new areas. And I think mentalism is probably something that I've been kind of toying around with now for the last 4 or 5 years. I've found myself performing still card magic, but usually dressed up as more kind of psychological effects, maybe. So I guess I would fall more into the psychological style of mentalism, playing it as maybe suggestion or influence or something like that, rather than kind of, you know, I've got a special power kind of thing. So, yeah, so that's kind of a bit about kind of how I like to frame things with what I present.
So my question straight off the bat is, did you find yourself performing this in this style, as in suggestion, psychology-based, more mentalism-type magic, did you find yourself performing this way because you were intrigued by it, or was it dictated by... Because you perform a lot, right? You are a performer.
Yeah.
So was this dictated, you know, by people reacting better to that style?
Interesting, isn't it? I think my views have changed, I would say. I think I've... my interests in magic have changed. So, and I think it's like the believability bit as well. I think I personally find it, a lot of people are going to hate me for this.
Say it. I love it already. Because I think we share similar opinions.
Yeah.
Maybe?
So I have met people and magicians who present this idea of I'm magic and therefore this magic stuff happens. For me, that I feel that's really cringy, and like that's my view on it. I personally can't sell the idea of that to people. So I think over time I've just changed my views more around you know, what is just maybe highly improbable, and it's very interesting that a thing happens. So it could happen, and obviously there are moments where you lead people to these like realms of impossibility and you do enter that those kind of areas. But I think initially I do want people to believe as though this thing is happening and it and it's a believable thing. It's not I'm a wizard, you know.
This is like one of the most fascinating things to talk about for me, because I had this discussion with Craig the other day, and he is completely against, or at the time completely against, the idea of the audience believing in any way that what he does is magic in any way.
Sure.
Whereas I'm okay to leave it open-ended. So I wouldn't let somebody be made a fool of. But certain things, like an ACAN, for example, like somebody can't fly. Well, I mean, you can't, it's a whole different discussion, right? But if I was to tell you I could just click my fingers and vanish, that couldn't happen for where we stand in technology and science right now.
Yeah,
you can make things float, and it's only magic up until you understand. Like, for example, like the floating light bulb desk lamp. That light bulb is floating. There's a way of doing it, but for all of that, it's really floating, right? Which is kind of real magic, but with a method. But an ACAN absolutely could happen.
Exactly. Yeah.
Right. It's a 1 in 52, not 2,704, whatever it is. It could happen, and to tell people that that's not real is kind of like when people say, don't let them think that. Well, it's like, hang on, what's the point of anything then? What are you doing this for?
Go to comedy.
Right? That's why I like that. It's all about the believability. What I'm taking from is that going down the psychological influence route, you can be more convincing.
Yeah, so I'm more, I guess we could distill it down to certain values and principles that I subscribe to, and therefore, just as a person, I would say as well, I think that's important. Yeah. So it doesn't feel like I'm putting on a costume and another mask to present the magic I share. It just feels more like...
it's you.
Yeah, exactly, right? So it's just... And I think just kind of like go back to that kind of believability bit. And I guess I am quite a logical thinker. I am quite practical. So, I do have other work and kind of really some of the kind of ideas and thoughts from there. The magic I present, I want there to be kind of some reason behind it as well. I don't want it to feel as though, I think you can make something float, right? But why are you making it float? Yeah. It's not just because it's fucking cool. Excuse me. I don't even know if it's
fine. Right. Yeah, go for it.
Yeah, okay, cool. So, all right, it is cool sometimes to make something float. But personally, I like to have some kind of, not meaning or story necessarily, but just some kind of motivation around a thing. So I think that really boils down to I am quite... practical, logical thinker, and having reasons around things sit well with me, which allows me to present what I present in a more copacetic way.
So it's really cool and interesting to me that you mentioned that about how your personal beliefs play into your performances. Because when we organized getting you on the show, I was thinking about how I would describe you, or what sets you apart to other people that I know and other performers. And the one thing that I get from you, and I think is really special, and it's crazy that you said that about you, because it was the missing piece to the puzzle of you, which is that when I, you know, sometimes you watch a performer perform and you're nervous for them. Do you ever get that? Like secondhand nerves, because you think, oh, they're a bit ropey, or they don't know what they're doing. When I watch you perform, I've seen you perform live in Blackpool, I've seen you in person performing, and when I watch your releases with like Mindhouse and stuff, you are one of the most solid performers ever. And I get really bad secondhand embarrassment for a lot of people, more than I should. But this, and I think I've said this to you, Jake, when we watched one of the new trailers that you put up recently, like, you're just such a authentic performer. You're really you. And because of that, I can watch you enjoyably. And I really don't get that very often with a lot of people. And it's funny you just picked up and you said that, because I get it. I believe you 100%. You are authentic, and your beliefs do shine through.
Like, yeah, I'm not sure how much of that is true, but I appreciate the kind of words.
I think, honestly.
Yeah, I do. I do think it's important to be I think you guys have mentioned this already on another one of the podcasts. But it was the whole extension of me. That was it. Eric Jones had a project named it, but it.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's true. Like, I find it very awkward when. I don't know, you just see someone trying to be someone they're not.
Yeah.
And I just think that works against you. You know, we are all our own person. And I think we all, don't get me wrong, like, we do take on elements of other people's performance styles and all this kind of, and I think that's, as long as that's inspiration and not imitation around what you're doing, then I think that's good and that's fine. And we're building on other ideas. But yeah, no, that means a lot, you've said that. Thank you.
That's true. Honestly, I love watching you. I love your creations. Honestly, it's the reason why we got you on here. We're such a fan of your work, but also I love watching you work an audience too. I always used to laugh on about people who are not themselves. I know, like, I think it's different when somebody's specifically a character. You know, like, there was a guy.
Yeah, they've invented a characters.
Yeah, like there was a guy at the London Magic Convention who was the Mad Hatter, you know, from Alice in Wonderland.
Cool. Yeah.
And his act was, his act was brilliant. It was a toss-up between him and another person I thought could have won it for real. Yeah. And I'm not really a guy who's into character-based magic, but it was really good. It worked for him. But there's something to be said about people who go into a false character, like somebody who you just tell it doesn't suit them. And I noticed a few people before would complain about, I would never do this trick because it's gimmicked. And then I'd watch them perform and they'd be in a character that's not them. And I think, well, hang on, you are the gimmick and you're complaining because something's gimmicked. Like, mate, you are what you eat or criticize.
it's an interesting thing to talk about as well, because I quite like it when you see a performer or a creator, someone who releases things, and you can see the point where they decide to start being themselves. And some of the material that they put out might change direction completely from the earlier stuff because they've decided to just accept and stop being a character. And I mean, it's strange looking at certain people and seeing that they've got two completely separate eras in their releases.
Yeah, I feel like I'm guilty of that. Like, I started off my magic career with like slow-mo visual magic, and now like I'm all about mysticism.
I remember Luke Jermais saying something interesting, and it was, you can pretty much see a very drastic change in his material over even just, you know, the past 5 years or so, where he kind of approaches from a more mystical angle, and it's the universe that's magic, and I am a vessel for this thing that's happening. And I remember him saying something really interesting he used to come from a more psychological standpoint. And then he's approached the mentalism in a more mystical way, because he thought that it was more dangerous for people to think that the psychological stuff was real than to think that the magic stuff was real. Because he heard that some of the things he created with Derren Brown were being referenced in universities as if they were actual statistics and studies and actual things that can happen.
We laugh, but that is dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, people are probably citing that at points. But I think one thing that's just popped into my head there is, I think there is some of that must be progression though, right? You know, this whole like presenting one thing in the first place and something. And I don't mean progression in a sense that this later thing is better than the earlier thing. Just as we all go through life, we just, you know, we discover new things. We enjoy new things at different points. And I think usually our work will be a reflection of that.
Yeah.
You know, I've got like tons and tons of card magic material that I just don't do anymore, because it's just, I don't know, it just doesn't interest me as much. You know, I've got some like visual, like four ace productions and things, but I just wouldn't, I don't know, I just can't see myself going to a group and using that right now. And that's okay. Doesn't mean it's rubbish, by the way. It just means, it's just what I want to share right now.
I get that. You've got to be invested in it yourself. I was in New York once. I won't name the magician just purely because they may not want to be named, but, you know, hugely well-known magician, and he did the most like technical card sleight hand ever. And I said to him, he was performing and nailing it. He performing tech visual sleight hand to lay audience, right? It's one, you know, and he was absolutely flawless.
Mm.
And I said to him, why do you choose to do like slights like that difficult, where you really could be caught and it could be, you know, it could be exposed so easily, and maybe you have been caught and don't realize, you know, because nobody's perfect. When if you are going to perform magic, you could do something like if a card's going to vanish, you could just use an Erdnase thing to vanish and possibly get a bigger reaction, because, you know, and definitely find it easier to allow you to focus on the performance. And he turned around and instantly like said, because I enjoy it. And it was profound, like really was profound for me, because it was like, well, yeah, if you don't enjoy what you do, then who are you doing it? Well, what are you doing it for?
There's very little sincerity when someone doesn't enjoy the effects that they're performing.
Yeah, we've all heard the stories of a certain stage magician that phones it in because they've done it 10,000 times. Going back to you said you're very much like a logical thinker, Adam. How does that play into your creativity, and what would you say your creative process is, if you could define it?
Yeah, it's a tough one, isn't it? Because I think sometimes I think, just to kind of set a bit of a backdrop, I think sometimes my logical thinking can be a barrier for me, and it doesn't allow me to explore ideas fully or all the what ifs, because straight away my mind is jumping to, well, wait a minute, what if? I'm kind of like trying to look down the train track a little bit to go, actually, I don't really want to explore that avenue. And I think that because the bias I have is I want to be able to present my personal material in the real world. So I think that's just a lens that I'm looking on the situation with. But I think quite often it's strange, right? Because sometimes I'll start with an idea for a premise and go, wouldn't it be interesting if, like, and literally as loose as, wouldn't it be interesting if there was an effect around X? Sometimes I'll start there. But then even then, I find it sometimes very difficult to get to like a built out effect or routine that I can then go and share and present and test. Whereas sometimes it'll start the other way around, where I will have a clever method for something. And then I'm thinking, what can I do with this? So what I can't really share is like a bit of a blueprint as to how I go about creating. Like, there are logical steps in that, like, okay, how could I do this? And I am often thinking in terms of, I call them enabling constraints, or some person I know calls them forcing factors. So it's like, okay, I might say, I want a part of this effect. I want this effect to feel like the spectator's done everything. The participant has done everything here. Okay. So that's like an enabling constraint for me. So I can be creative within that. Or it's not too dissimilar from that game that you guys have played before with, like, was it plot principle?
What? Premise? Premise.
Something like that.
Right? Plot principle, again, premise.
Yeah, Jake fucking loved it.
Yeah.
It's always made me queasy.
I think it's ace.
But the point is, like, you know, you're actually kind of, you are putting enabling constraints in place, or what I call like these enabling constraints or forcing factors, which is like, I force myself to think creatively within the bounds of like this isn't this. It's like, okay, what could I do with this? And I think I do find myself getting to, I mean, if I'm interested in an idea, I will work on it. Like, I will work on the idea. And I will, like, to the point where if it requires like a printed thing or whatever, I'll get it printed and I'll go and try and work it. Like, but then if I fall out of love with it or I hit a barrier sometimes, I just think you need to wait sometimes. And I'm not necessarily rushing to get something out there or even get out there in general to perform it. You know, it's
Have you ever created something, because I've had this, where you are hyped on it and then you perform it and it falls flat, like no matter what you do?
Yeah.
Like, or the opposite way around, where you've created something, you're like, I got nothing else to perform, I'll just do this, I don't think it's very good. And then suddenly it's everyone's favorite trick and you're like, why? This is not it.
Yeah. I think it's... I think you have to share what you're working on. People probably have different opinions on this, but I think in order to understand whether anything's any good, you have to get feedback on it. And I don't necessarily mean by other magicians necessarily. I mean, you've got to share it with, and again, this is where my other work starts to come into play. So in my other work, I work in digital consultancy. So we work on products, digital products and things like that. And the thing I'm always thinking is, how do I get this into the hands of my customer quickly so I can get that feedback and I can learn quickly to understand whether or not it's achieving success, whatever that is, whatever we define that as. So I think you need to test ideas frequently and often. And I think that's a similar approach I take with my effects, because it might be in the Oracle. And I might say to one of the other guys there, oh, what do you think about this? And that's quite a cool idea. Go, I'm going to try that at the next table. And I will just go out and I will try that.
Wow, that quick, like just there and then.
Yeah. Well, because don't forget, like a lot of the time we're just piecing together pieces of the puzzle that we're familiar with. So it might be a card force and a revelation in an interesting way with an interesting story around it. Or what if I did this bit first? What would that do? And it's, you know, don't get me wrong, like, very fortunate to have that set up and being able to kind of rinse and repeat. You know, on a busy night, in there, I could, 30 tables.
This is the Oracle Bar in Liverpool.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I must admit, like, when I get busier with events and, you know, things like that, I'm not in there every week. But, you know, on a busy night, on a Saturday night, if you're in there, you could perform at 30 tables. And it's very easy to go in to your safe set. You know, I know that if I do this, this, and this, like, it's going to get great reactions. And I think that's okay. But, you know, if this is your creative outlet and you want to, I think you have to use some of that airtime and flight time to test new ideas. Otherwise, you just, well, you'll never know. You'll just sit on it and, you know, I don't know.
You using that kind of modular approach to things probably does make it a lot easier to bring things in and out with testing. If you are coming from the approach is, you know, here's the reveal, here's this, here's that. Yeah. Probably makes it a lot easier to switch it in and out if it isn't working.
Well, yeah, 100%. But I think also, even sometimes just switching something around in an effect changes the effect completely in terms of, oh, now this is a prediction effect.
Yeah.
This isn't a divination thing anymore. Now this is a prediction. Or, oh, actually, if we flip that round, now it can be spectator's mind reader if we did it that way. But I think if I'm honest, like, I need to probably call out. So John Gustafero's got the book One Degree. So if you've not read it, one of his main beliefs in there is all about marginal gains. And I think that's definitely plays into my like professional work in, away from magic, around what 1% changes can we make to what we're doing and what we're using to essentially improve. So continuous improvement as a thing, I would say, definitely spills into my magic. And sometimes it's just fun to try new things as well, right? So
I can literally attest to that in recent times. Well, fairly recent, but like I actually got more proof of it the day, which was there's a triumph that I do in the Patreon, right?
Mate, you guys, it's amazing. And,
thanks, man. Well, for years, I'd never shown it to Kaylee. I only used it to fool magicians, right? And I'd shown it to a bunch of lay people, and you guys, it's the same as the way you learned in the Patreon, but just sort of the backstory for anyone else is that for years it always been a tabled triumph. It was done on the table, and it's super fooling because it's like real, like you just the deck just magically unshuffles, kind of crazily, but God damn it, it's the most boring trick I ever did in my life. Like everyone I would show it to would be like, I have no idea how that works and I don't care. Like it was both. Like every lay person I showed it to, it was the most boring trick they'd ever seen, but they had no idea how it worked. And it wasn't until I decided to take it into a standing up routine that it completely started to be an entertaining. Pardon?
I was just saying really like...
Yeah, it was just that one degree of taking it into a standard. Anyway, I performed it to Kaylee. I pre-recorded a fooler last Thursday. I did two back-to-back. And for the first time ever she'd seen this triumph, I just hadn't shown it to her because I'd given up on it. It was such a boring trick. And I did it. And I did it the way it's done now. Mm-hmm. And she went wild for it. Like, way wilder than I'd ever expected her to go, ever. And like, for her, it was one of her favorites. She says it on video. And they're never, like, script or anything.
Yeah.
She was like, this is one of the best card tricks you've ever shown me, like ever. And it's exactly what you're saying. That one degree change after time can take something which never worked into something which totally, totally works. Bizarre. It's bizarre, but anyone listening, like completely, if you've got a trick that you love that maybe never hit for you, go back over it and think, what can I do one bit differently? One other thing that used to happen was I used to do my app Cypher, and I would reveal the lottery ticket or the number on paper and things. And I randomly got a tattoo in San Francisco, and I did the same routine I always do, and I revealed the numbers this time on a tattoo because I had nothing on me to write it down. Mm-hmm. And the person I performed it to very first off cried, and it was the same routine, but it was just because it was tattooed on my skin. And almost every time But if I perform it with the same script and routine on a specific type of audience member, it will almost guarantee me to get tears. But the routine doesn't change at all for me. Completely doesn't change. But it's just because it's tattooed. 1 degree.
Do you know, honestly, so there's a similar thing I've been... It's a very new routine that I'm playing around with at the moment. But essentially, there's there's something I do right at the beginning of my day. You know, I say hello to people and I'll say, I want you to remember that this is the first thing that we did. And then I do something, right? And I used to write something down, pop it in a little envelope and give it to someone. And much later on, and I say, however, right at the start, I said, and then people go, oh, and then they realize there's a moment come in, and then you see someone pat for the pocket and get the envelope out. And it was good reaction, it was great reactions, etc. But now, 1%, first thing I do is say, I want you to remember that the first thing we did was this. And what that is I need to Google something on somebody else's phone. Right? And I don't know why, but the reactions are through the fucking roof because it's on their phone.
Yeah.
Googled. And it doesn't even need to be Googled, the thing. Like, it doesn't need to be Googled. But sometimes when you Google it, it brings up, like, a little preview of a thing and stuff like that. So it's just 1%. It's like, that's such a small change. Instead of writing it down, I've just typed it in someone's phone. Not doing anything sneaky on the phone.
Just literally like searching for
I am literally just searching for it.
And force
don't get me wrong. Yeah, I mean, yeah, it's not cards, like but the thing there is that it gives us a conversation point as well. So I say, you know, if someone passes me the phone, I'll say, did you notice that this gentleman wouldn't let me anywhere near that phone? It doesn't mean anything. But, you know, and I say, I'm only joking. And like, but now we're having a conversation. We're having a laugh. Mm. It's, people are enjoying themselves, which, you know, in some of the situations which I perform, I would say almost all of them, you want people to be enjoying themselves. But, you know, I do some weddings and things. So, you know, it's quite lighthearted and people have a laugh. people make all kind of jokes at that point as well. And I don't even have to, you know, fill in the blanks. So.
Oh, yeah. But like, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. Things. one of the things I was going to ask you directly based off what me and Jake have been talking about on the last, well, almost every episode, and okay. you basically touched upon it there, so it's a perfect segue, but what are the little things that you do in your performances that elevate them, that like heighten them just a little bit more, like maybe it's a phrase, like you just said, you know, it's, you kind of just said it, so I apologize if it's
no, it's fine.
What are the little touches you add in to just heighten bits?
So I think one way to kind of elevate your magic is to, can't believe I'm sharing this because I'm basing a whole show on it later in the year, but
so, you're going to hear first.
Is, I'm going to regret this, it's fine. So to find a universal theme.
Okay.
Find something that everyone can relate to. So one of the things that I'm trying, so later in the year, I'm trying to put together a show at the moment, which is going to be like a super intimate show. It's going to be like 12 people in the show. That's it.
Whoa.
And we're going to run like a venue that I'm speaking to, and it's quite a small space. But I want to run the show a few times, but I don't want anyone to speak about what happens in the show and all this kind of stuff. But again, it's about, I'm trying to find a universal theme. So one of the reasons I think, I mean, apart from the fact that Derek Delgado is amazing, in and of itself worked so well, was it was about identity.
Mm.
Everybody can relate to what he's talking about. So one of the things, and again, I bit of a blank canvas at the moment, but I'll give one example, is time. So time is a universal theme that everybody experiences, everybody interacts with it. Even if you're presenting a close-up effect, just find like those universal themes that you might perform a simple card trick now, but you could reframe it so that you ask a question in the beginning that then this this card trick is performed on top of this backdrop of what you've said. So one of the things I often ask is, are you someone who believes more in fate or free will?
Free will.
Yeah, and to be fair, it doesn't matter what you say, but later on I'll say something along the lines of, basically, it's not my job to convince you either way, whether you fall into the camp of free will or fate. However, there's been a card in your pocket since the beginning, right? And you just leave them questioning things, or so to kind of just sprinkle in like things that are nothing to do with magic, but they're again, they're telling a bit of a story, they're setting a bit of a scene for this.
Just connecting dots together slowly.
Yeah. Or leave it open, like do enough so that they can then make the mind up later. Or, I used to have an effect where similar to that, what I've just kind of said there, but essentially at the end, they have this envelope. And I used to say, now, it's not my choice when you open the envelope. You can either choose to open the envelope when I leave the table, or you can just leave it in your pocket. You can just take it home. I say, either way, it's been a pleasure spending time with you. Thank you for having me over. And I'll just walk off.
How many people open it there and then?
90%. But a few people literally love it because they've got this secret and they're in control of the group.
Would it work if you just wrote something like just on about that trick that thing, like if you wrote on a business card, I knew you wouldn't wait?
Yeah.
So they open it, they're like, ah.
Darren did the whole thing, didn't he, with his granddad with the Karan's medallion, when he says, Darren, I knew you'd look, or whatever it is in the So you could do something like that.
Do you know what? There's a type of pen that it's an ink that fades off after 24 hours. Have you seen that? There's a trick released. I won't name the trick because it'll expose the method. But it was a trick that was put out like 15 years ago, and that was the secret, right?
Okay.
So, I'm trying not to give away the trick. It's 15 years old, but...
Yeah, there was a thing. I was watching one of Luke Jermaine's things recently. And
it wasn't a Jermaine thing.
He referenced another thing. But I was like,
okay,
oh, interesting. It was like you send something, right?
Yes, But what you could do is you could say to someone, I've got two cards. One of them is blank. One of them I'm writing something on right now, and I'm going to place it, one of them in the envelope. You don't know which one it is, but it'll be the correct one or something along these lines. You could even write something. I don't know. So you put it in the envelope. You say, if you're going to open it, I want you to open it now. And I'm going to walk away. I'm going to walk away. You're either going to open it now, but if you're not going to open it now, you're not going to open it until next week. All right. That's the only rule. So you could open it right now and have that itch scratched immediately, instant gratification with the 21st century children, or you wait patiently until next week to see if you were right. And if you were right, it'll be blank. And if you open it now, it'll have writing on. But either way, when they open it, it will be blank in a week's time. And if they open it now, it says, I knew you wouldn't wait, or something like that.
See, I think where the real point of interest is in that is this idea of, in the world we live in now, it's just full of instant gratification.
Yes.
So you're providing this... You're kind of bringing them out of that reality for a moment and saying, I'm going to give you a choice. Do you fall into what we've learned to be everyday behavior, which is instant gratification, or can you demonstrate resilience? And can you just wait? Something like that where...
Yeah. What if you could write, if you had an identical ink but didn't fade? So you wrote something... say it was a little business card and it started off at the top, and then you switched it for the special ink underneath to complete the phrase. So, those sentences that make sense half with either half or not, so it says something along the lines of, if they open it in a week's time, it says something like, by being patient, you've allowed yourself to clear your mind and allow yourself to think freely, and the rest of it's like a blank space, like, you know, put down a dream here or something. I don't know. But if it, but if they don't, it says if you waited to work with first, same thing, but you didn't and you couldn't wait or something. I don't know. But either way, it makes it a positive phrase anyway.
Yeah, and you leave them with something interesting to kind of take away.
But it's that could be a cool way of doing it, because it's one way of getting it right both ways, instead of using it in a different context, like the original way, you know?
Yeah. And then the other thing, like, just kind of like pulling us back to the original question around like elevating the performance. I don't know if this elevates the performance, but it allows me to have fun, which I think is only a good thing. Every so often, if I'm, you know, trying to determine some information or get a read from somebody, I'll always like have a bit of a frequent question I keep coming back to. So then when I'm at the event, and it means nothing, by the way, but I'll just go, have you got a cat?
Oh.
No. Right, okay. Are you sure you've not got a cat? And honestly, like, I'll do it another group. Sometimes I get hit, they go, oh my God, I'm thinking of getting a cat this week. Like, or something like that. And then obviously you're just like nailed. But if you don't get hit, the group go away going, what was that cat thing about? You kept asking about a cat. Like, what was that? Was he using that in some way to figure out what was going on?
That I love so much. There's something about that.
Just, I have so much fun with it. Because I had a guy come up to me this weekend, just gone. I was at a wedding. He came up to me later and was like, what was the cat? He kept asking about a cat. And I went, did you not? And he went, oh, I said, you'll figure it out. I just left him to it. Because it was so fun. We were all talking about it. And you don't, obviously, it doesn't have to be, do you have a cat? But it could be just another random question you want to throw out there. And
I think, what was it? I seen Pete doing something in a similar vein where he would just say, you're not a Gemini, are you? Until he would say it at every performance. And then it, obviously, 1 in 12 is going to hit-ish.
Yeah.
And then once he hit a Gemini, he would change it up to, and the next time he would ask, it's like, you're not a Pisces, are you? Until he would hit. And every now and then it would just hit, and you get like a complete. But the thing about that cat statement is so. It's. If, like you said, when it hits, it's really good. But when it doesn't hit, it's almost more intriguing.
It is. Because I keep faced with it. Doesn't matter. Forget about it. Like.
I wonder. But then, if
funny thing
way...
is, they'll hear me at a group later if you're at an event or something. You know. Is he asking you about the cat thing as well?
Imagine it was something like this, right? Just thinking creatively, no barriers. But if there was something that you could, something you could manufacture to take place. Like, okay, forget this completely, right? But it's like, you say, I'm getting like, do you like eating crackers? Are you into crackers? I know this is a really strange question, but do you eat a lot of crackers? And they're like, no, I'm getting crackers big time for you. Later on, you do a trick, which is bringing up the last time their family was together.
Right?
And a good experience. And you force a day of the year. It happens to be Christmas Day. And you're like, I'm not sure why I'm getting this, but do you have any family photos of you guys eating Christmas dinner? And on the table, will be crackers.
Yeah.
And then you bring up the photo and you reveal that they were thinking of Christmas Day, you knew it all along, blah, blah, blah. And you're like, all right, okay, it makes sense. And there's the crackers that I've been getting all along. And this has been doing my head in, but now it makes sense. And so like you almost like orchestrate, it's not the word, not manufacture, but you orchestrate something that you know people may or may not have.
Yeah.
You know? Like all I was thinking is that, as you were saying, the cat thing, if you were in a venue and a cat was, you knew the pub you were in, the owner had a cat.
Cat walked past.
just casually like, well, and then like 10 minutes in, like, there's the cat, okay, that's out of my mind now. And then you're like, no fucking way, like, did that just, if that could happen where you could actually make it real apart from when you hit, could lead to some really interesting experiences being perceived.
It's straying once more into the realms of the pipe dream, because you'd never do it if it was a wedding gig that, you know, you don't have the mental capacity and budget for, but to kind of combine both of those approaches would be interesting. If at every single table you just took a moment and stopped and said, did anyone else just see the guy wearing like the bunny ears go past on a bicycle? No, okay. Doesn't matter,
just me.
And then an hour after the show finishes, just put on some bunny ears and ride past on a bike really quickly.
Yo,
That'd be so good.
Do you know what would be crazy, actually, on about that? Is that if you... Right, so obviously pipe dream. But if like you're saying, like the bunny ears, right? Say, for example, bunny ears. So you talk, you introduce this, like, did you see the guy with the bunny ears just walk past? Say it's like the evening gig, or the evening at night do. And every table you say it to. So now there's people talking about this guy with bunny ears all night. And like, what's the magician all about? And then when there's always a group photo at the end of the night or at some point. Yeah. It's always a massive group photo. You say, look, to whoever's going to do the photo, I'm going to put some bunny ears on. Do not draw attention to it. It's part of a trick. So you put bunny ears on. Mm. The photo gets taken. You take them off straight away. So now there's one photo that exists with somebody wearing bunny ears. That's it. No one else knows. Even if they're photoshopped on, actually. But then when the photos do the rounds, after the fact, like a week later, everyone will be going, are you kidding me? That there is a guy with bunny ears there. That I what? I never seen him. Did you? No, I never seen him.
So, like, with that, you could, right, so at a wedding, you know everybody's name.
Yeah.
Because there's a table plan. So you could just figure out a name that doesn't appear there. Oh. And with every group, you know, when you're performing something, you could say, tell you what, Alex in the other group, he's completely mental. He's not, who wears bunny ears to a wedding or whatever it is?
Yes.
Move on. And then people will be like, after a while, they'll go, who's Alex? There isn't an Alex or whatever. And then obviously you got your photo moment later. Like, but obviously you'd have to get somebody else that's, it would maybe wouldn't work. Because maybe get like a...
Oh my God.
It like the florist that nobody sees. Get them to do the photo. They'd be at the wedding or a caterer from the kitchen that nobody's seen.
Oh, that's a good shout. Ears. That's a great shout.
Yeah.
That's a good shout.
Just say, do you want to, like, let's have some fun. Like, you know,
it's almost like it makes me think that, like, you could go along the, like, you could convince the bride and groom, like, right, okay, you guys got to be on this. We're going to make Alex disappear. Alex doesn't exist, but you're going to put a table space for him. You're going to put his name on the thing. I'm going to tell everyone at different tables, blah, blah, blah. Oh my God, you're the best experience. I made Alex disappear. And then you go to the next person. I made Alex disappear. So you start this rumor that you made Alex disappear. Everyone can see Alex was, there was a seat for him. His name was there. Alex is in a photo at the end of the night or the beginning of the night. No one remembers him. And you say, I'm going to wipe Alex from all of your memory. Well, yeah. So, you know what I mean? Like, you create this thing. And when they go back, finally, they say, well, yeah, there was an Alex there. What the hell? Like, he's at the ceremony. He's at the vows. Maybe you hypnotize them to make them think Alex is invisible.
Pseudo-hypno stuff.
And yeah, no one likes the drunk uncle at a wedding, right? I'm going to make you forget about him.
Oh, I'm going to make you forget about this terrible experience. That would be cool, though. If you've got the bride and groom in on it, like, look, we're going to hypnotize everyone to forget that the guy wearing bunny ears is visible. Or we're going to make everyone think that he's invisible. And when they ask him, well, the trick is, he's not actually going to be there, but he will be in the photos. Because that would be wicked. Like, oh, that'd be okay.
Mad, wouldn't it?
That magician made us all see this one person as invisible.
And I think, you know, that's playing the long game. But I think in general, with your the reason I think I sprinkle things in or I ask a question at the start is the majority of the time when I am performing, I am trying to think about what I'm presenting as a whole, rather than I'm going to do this trick, then this trick, then this trick. I'm trying to think about how can I bring this all together.
Yeah.
You know, because you all, I don't want to describe it as a mini show, but you do want to provide an experience to every group that feels like it flows, and there's moments and there's beats and there's ups and downs and there's, you know, so you don't want it to feel as though here's trick one, here's trick two.
Yeah.
You know, so I think by sprinkling things in, or, you know, essentially what you just came up with there around this idea of a person called Alex who's not at the wedding, or maybe he was and we don't remember him, you know, you're just expanding the idea of that. It's like, how do we make the event an experience? Like, what's that? What's like the thread that's running through everything? You know, you can say, do you ever walk into a room and then forget why you've walked in there? And, you know, you could like expand on that. You could play around with like an amnesia type thing. You say, and then you can bring Alex into the conversation by saying, I thought he was in the last group, you should have seen what he drew. Like, Alex is mad. or whatever it is, and move on. And then it's interesting, you almost forget Alex's name. You can do like a name thing, and I don't know, it'd be interesting like to play around with, like creatively.
What if it was you go to a table and you got, say, oh, three cards here or three envelopes, whatever you choose is whatever I'm going to perform for the table. One says magic, one says mentalism, one says hypnotism. I'm going to mix them up. You're going to choose. They always choose mentalism, right? Or magic, because depending, you want to look varied, right? You say, oh, crazy. Okay, the table over there, they chose hypnotism. So I hypnotized everyone on the table to see Alex as invisible. The way I did it is by I flashed this light just like, oh, no. I'm so sorry. I flashed the, oh my God. Can you guys see Alex with the bunny ears on? Or is it just me? Yeah. Oh, okay, right. Well, unluckily, you've also chosen hypnotism, but I'll do the rest of the set with mentalism. My apologies. And then you just perform.
Yeah.
And then, yeah.
I like the bunny ears. However, what about something a little bit more subtle so that when the photos are taken, no one's going to realize this other person? You could just say the guy with the dicky bow or something like that. Not many people wear dicky bows to
weddings. Yellow dicky bow.
Yeah, like, see the guy with the tweed jacket and the dicky bow. And then, you know, you can just have a tweed coat, a tweed jacket and a dicky bow in your car. And then get the caterer in at the end to stand. I don't know. It'd be fun.
It'd be so cool if you, like, hired a celebrity lookalike. Like, oh, what, no one noticed that? I don't even know who a good celebrity is. One of the Chuckle Brothers was here. I see the Chuckle Brother, by the way.
What? I hope it was the living one.
He was going to say, yeah.
Yeah, no, it was. It was just before one of them died. Just after one of them died. He was eating at TGI Fridays in Swansea, and I walked past. I was with Kaylee, and I was like,
oh, I just seen a chuckle.
She was like, I just seen a fucking chuckle. I'm not even kidding. Like, what are you talking about? I was like, Barry. Sitting in the window of TGI. All of our American listeners, the Chuckle Brothers are a comedy duo. One of them's dead. But they were really good. Tangents. You may have heard the 45
minute. I'm gonna share one more thing about the wedding at weekend, and I got in a bit of a mess, right? So people won't admit this stuff, like horror stories performing magic. But my God. So I won't go into what went wrong because I'd have to tip a method of a thing. So I won't do that. However, let's just say there was a card, you know, a congratulations card with a prediction inside it that had a thing written. You see what
I'm already dying.
Yeah. Inside a gift bag that I was presenting to the bride and groom at that point, right?
Don't, no, whoops. Oh my God.
No. Okay. So what did you've just got to, you've got to learn to swim. You've just got to, yeah. So essentially, what the only saving grace I had was that I've not told them that something was in there. So went through this process. Don't worry, we'd done other stuff as well. So it wasn't like this was a big thing. And I thought to myself, I'm gonna have to really go in here and I'm gonna have to really sell this fucking thing. So I said, in this bag, there's a card. And in that card, there's an envelope. And in that envelope, there's a prediction for you. And you're not going to believe what's in there. Mate, I had to just sell it, right? And when you're not going to believe what's in there, bear in mind, at this point, I have no idea what I'm going to do. Because I have to make all of this come good at some point. So I essentially was like, I'm going to give this to the bar manager, Chris, right? And Chris, I'm telling you now in front of everybody, the photographer's here, bride and groom are here, if I come to you later and I try to get near that, do not let me near it. The first thing I want you to do if that happens is tell the bride and groom. Be honest with me, will you do that? Yes. So I gave it to Chris and I said, go and enjoy the rest of your night. It's been a wonderful time being here, but please, tomorrow morning when you wake up or when you get home, take time together to open the gift for you, like that I've brought for you. You know, thank you so much. Oh,
yeah.
Shitting myself at this point, right? So that's gone. Chris, the bar manager, has fucked off with this bag with the card and everything inside. Now, I thought, what the fuck can I do here? So this was supposed to be predicting where they were going on honeymoon, right? And I basically had asked them earlier in the thing, and it was a question around. I said, has anyone, have you announced to anyone where you're going? And they were like, no. I said, so there's any way I could know? And they were like, no. So I said, but like a throwaway comment, I basically found out where they were going. Not before, like during the conversation.
How did you find out?
Right. So I asked them. It was the effect was supposed to be we're going on an imaginary honeymoon. Because no one could know where you're really going, right? We're going on an imaginary honeymoon.
Yeah, yeah.
Went through this effect. It went wrong, right? It went wrong. So and I just say I got to the point where I realized it wasn't going to play. I went, you know what? Let's do this for real. Let's do this for real. And then I basically referred to the prediction and I went, I'll let you open it in the morning. Like I went through to the hope and the prediction. So it kind of half made sense around this kind of thing. I took them down a garden path and then I went, we're going to, because I had to figure out
continue the show on to the next day, basically.
Anyway, you've just got me thinking around that Alex thing. So then what I did, I had to not only trick the bride and groom, but I had to trick Chris, the bar manager.
Yeah, I also had to beat the shit out of Chris.
but this is it, right? I wanted it to feel authentic to Chris still. That was my goal. It was like, how do I still, without just going, Chris, like, I need your help, mate. And don't get me wrong, he would have helped me. But I was like, how can I still, like, still, like, that, still fool Chris so that Chris can keep face with them and he can, like, authentically say, like, Adam didn't, like, there's no way.
Right, so just are in the story. So you had a different destination predicted to where they were going.
Yes.
Or imaginary going.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. And you wanted the effect to work for Chris.
So I didn't want to go to Chris and go, Chris, that's not gone right. I need that bag back. I didn't want to do that. I was like, come on, there's something better here. There's something better we can do. So I had spare things in the car, spare gift bags, spare cards, spare envelopes, everything, right?
Oh.
So I was like, I just need to fucking switch this. And I'm going to make it a confabulation of other things that have happened in that conversation.
Yeah.
So that now they're not just having the destination revealed, there's other things revealed in there, and they know that I couldn't have tampered with it because they were there when it happened. Oh. And the God. So I hope they don't watch this.
Do not share it on your social media. That's not public.
Essentially, I got two separate members of bar staff on. That I'd been there all day, so they know who I am. So I got one of them who happened to be leaving. They were finishing the shift. And I went, oh, just before you go, I said, Chris has just put something in that back room on the side. It's like a little white gift bag. I forgot to put something in it. Can you just grab it for me? She got it, brought it out. I switched. I didn't see, obviously, I went, oh, no worries, thank you. See you later. He's gone. So she doesn't really know she's been part of this switch. She's brought the big gift bag out. I did this switch and I basically said to another member of staff, this is just a gift, but just pop it on the side in there. It's just Chris knows about it. So essentially I've got the bar staff on, like, mate, honestly, I was like, it's the best of a bad situation. But I was like, they're going to open
Did you hear from them the next day?
Yeah, like they opened it and it predicted stuff, and they were just like, the guy was half sozzled anyway. But she, so it played well. But I was just like, oh my God.
I honestly thought you were going to go into put a list of destinations in like Digital Force bag and be like, Chris, at the end of the night, thank you so much for playing, mate. Like, part of the trick is that you're going to open the prediction and see for yourself because then it plays with them later. So name a number between 1 and 52, 50 or 100, whatever.
Yeah.
Okay, you're thinking of Bermuda. Great. Go ahead. Open up the card that's sealed inside there. What's it say? Bermuda. Incredible. Perfect. Now, I'm going to put the new envelope in here.
Yeah. So, Like, you know, honestly, I wish I'd have thought, where they I wish I'd have thought of this on the fly, but...
I think your method's better, though, because it's clean.
Well, yeah, but I was...
But Chris could just say, yeah, he's, I opened it as well.
Anyway, but I'm thinking, like, I need to... I know what went wrong. Yeah, a decision was gone. Like, basically, they changed their mind at a point, and they were like, well, no, I
did
want
to... Did you
it,
say,
like,
do you want to change their mind? And they went... Yes.
No. I'm not that ballsy. But the only thing I could have done differently, the only other approach I could have took was to go, well, no, you can't change your mind. And that just felt like I was getting confrontational. So I was like, okay. Well, and then I was thinking, oh my God, what have I done?
Maybe you could have gone along the lines of do you want to change your mind? They say yes. And now, because you know what the first thing is, you could say, just so everybody knows here, what did you just change your mind to? And they say Canada. And you go, now, you saying that out loud means I don't know.
Yeah.
Or maybe you actually say, write this down on a piece of paper. And then you say, look, Evan, what I actually is, I peaked that, I could know it. But the first thing you're thinking of, I actually couldn't know. I just want to show you how fair I can. I don't know.
Yeah.
So go back to the original thought, the one thing that you know safely nobody else could know. I don't know.
Yeah, but I just thought I'd share the war wounds there. But it brought me back to earth a little bit. Because, like, you know, quite often, it's not very often that, like, things are going wrong like that.
Yeah.
But, oh, man, like, when it happened.
When they do.
Like, oh, yeah, they do. And you need to, like, you just... I calmly, after I'd initially done the panic, like, I then kind of like went all in and I was like, you know, there's good tomorrow morning. I want you to open it. I don't want to be near it again. So I really framed it as like I can't touch it again. In fact, we're going to give it to Chris. Blah, blah. And then I calmly stepped away after they'd gone in. They'd gone into the perfect timing was, by the way, they were going in to do their first dance. Who's watching me now? Yeah. So I was like, just a simple switch. That's all we need to do here. Just a simple switch. They're never going to know anything. So that's what ended up happening. But I was like, they're in the first dance. The only people knocking around here are the bar staff. I can just, and I'm on side, like, you know.
I probably would have just gone, Chris, mate. Fucked.
Yeah, to be fair. And that was always an option. Like, I was kind of thinking, like, how do I not fool Chris, but how do I keep Chris so authentic with them?
He wouldn't be able to fake it. I love that you committed that way.
Oh my God.
Reminds me of a story years ago. We had I was going out for beers with the boys, and I so rarely would show magic or anything to my friends. Like, even to this day, I mean, I don't drink anymore. I don't even go out, but I would be so reluctant to do it with them because, you know, partly it's work as well. But there was the discussion came up about Darren Brown paying with blank money. And they were asking me, how did he do it? I'm guessing both of you have been asked this at least once in your careers.
Yesterday.
And it came up anyway. Yesterday, did you say?
Yeah.
No way.
Mechanic in way.
Oh, wow. Yeah, it's super popular, right? So it came up in conversation and I was like, oh, yeah, there's certain tricks and tips you can do to actually do this all the time. And one thing led to another, and it came up, all right then, Lloyd, I bet you can't go up to the barman and get free drinks. I can't remember what it was. I was like, all right, yeah, I'll take that bet. I can definitely do that. So I said, here's my wallet. There was no Apple Pay, but it was like literally years ago. I was like, here's my wallet, here's my money, be right back. So I went to the barman and I said that I'm going to like talk to him like Darren Brown did. And I went up to him and I remember where I was. It was a bar called Barracuda in Bridgend. And I said to him, yo, I've got a bet on with the boys that I can't get a round of drinks off you without paying. If you give me a round of drinks, you can see we're not skint. Give me the round of drinks. Later on, I'm going to slip you a tenner to say thank you. And it won't be too late. We're not going to leave. It was quiet in there anyway. So could you just pour the drinks and pretend that I'm paying you nothing? And he was like, yeah, sure. And I picked the barman that looked really sound. You know what I mean? The one that was like on our wavelength. And then so I was like, okay, here you go. And I was like, I'm going to pretend to pay you now. And I was pretending. I was like this, going in my pocket, nothing. And the boys could see that nothing was going in his hands. Took the drinks back, came down. They were like, what the hell, man? And then I was like, yeah. And then later on, like 2 hours later, I just walked over to him. And I think I gave him 30 quid. And the round of beers was 20. And the extra 10 of them was for him. And it was like, they still talk about it to this day.
That's
still to this day. And I just said to him, yo, do this and I'm going to give you money.
I love that. My favorite type of magic.
Yeah. I mean, the question is, you know, they have a lifelong story that Barman will never remember it.
Yeah.
True. I think the interesting thing there, though, is like, as a creative challenge, and again, you can't always do this in the heat of a moment, but the question is like, how do you create that moment without the barman knowing that he basically like blatantly just did the thing?
Yeah, your context like, is different.
He
wouldn't have sold it the same way the other barman did at the time. But yeah, I mean,
as a creative challenge, not as a
That is an interesting creative challenge, right? Like, come up with an effect that allows you to not pay for drinks or seemingly not pay for drinks when both the people that have challenged you and the bar person experience it in the same way. Because I know how the Darren one was done, and it's not, you know, something you would do on the regular.
Yeah. There's a few. This is interesting, right? You want to be able to, again, what are the constraints? So the constraints are, you take your watch off, you give your phone to your mate, it's your wallet, you've got nothing on you. You can go up to the bar on your own, you can talk to the bar person, and you come back with the drinks. So those are your conditions. And I think the most obvious one is to prepay.
Yeah.
You just pay before and go, in about 10 minutes, I'm just going to come up. This is what I'm going to order. Can I just pay for it now? And you say, but the only stipulation is, please don't pour them now and leave them on the side.
What would the trick be? Or what would the experience be for the... What could an experience be for the barman that makes it just as impressive to him? Maybe to him... Okay, this would be cool. You say to the guys, you say, I'm going to go and pay for a round of drinks with a blank piece of paper. Don't believe me? Watch this. Go up to the barman and you say to him, you've already prepaid him. You know that's cool. And you say, hiya, man, can you pour me 4 random beers of your choice? And he does. He comes back. You now thumb write Carlsberg, Foster's, Peroni, Moretti on this blank piece of paper on the back. And you say, is there any way I could know that you were going to pick those 4 beers? You know, no. And then you hand him what looks like to everyone else from behind the blank piece of paper, but he sees you've predicted all the 4 drinks. So he goes, oh my God, whoa, how did you do that? And you're like, thank you very much. Can you keep a secret? Yeah, so whatever. So you take it back. He said, just don't tell them how I did it. Whatever thing you tell them. So they see you paying with blank paper. He witnesses a prediction effect, but to everyone, it seems like you're doing something.
That's what I was thinking, which was, you know, how do you create a moment for him when you're collecting the drinks so that it feels like he's, or maybe, you know, even like just leaning over the bar and whispering something to him and then passing in, but he still reacts in some way to something. Whispers. Jake can talk about whispers.
Oh, God. Yeah. And I like the idea of incorporating whispers somehow in, but I also like the idea of, overpaying him, giving him a tip and stuff, but also saying, can I grab my change later as well? So you say to your mates, I'm going to go pay with a piece of paper. Actually, you know what? No, I'm going to get him to give me the change back as well.
That's great.
Oh, you can even say to him, look, I'm going to prepay you the drinks, right? But I'm going to do a deal, man. I'm going to show you a piece of magic later on. If I get it right, you just got to give me the change. If I get it wrong, you keep the change. Cool. Go up, order the 4 drinks, and then you pay for him. And now you get this moment of him, and you go, oh, where's my change? And he goes, oh, yeah, I'm so sorry. I don't know. Yeah, dude, brilliant. It's the change, I suppose, that really sells it, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, I like that as well. If you're predicting something and it's like written small on a blank piece of paper, you get him looking at the paper, and then you can say to him, is that right? And he goes, yeah.
Oh,
like is that the right?
If you predict the price of the beers to what they'd come to, you could say to him, "And how much is there?" And he goes, £18.40. And you go, exactly. So he tells you that it's money. Like he to them, they overhear him saying how much is worth.
I like the choosing the parts that you're going to kind of emphasize. So you could be walking away from the bar and then say to your mates, oh, I forgot to get my change, wink, wink. And then say, can I have my change? Or like you
could even send someone else to go up and get it.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah,
can I go grab my change for me off him?
Wow. You could make that a secondary thing. So you've gone and done the thing, you've done the paper thing, you've done the prediction, they've had an effect. And you can just say to him at the end, say, oh, I know this sounds weird, I'm going to send somebody else to get my change in a minute.
Yeah.
And now if you walk back to the group, say, there you go, there's your drinks. And then someone goes, well, how the, you go, I'll tell you what,
yeah,
I'll teach you. And you can whisper to them. Everybody else thinks you're giving them some secret. You go, just walk up to the bar and ask for the change from that guy.
Yeah, I've done the hard work for you.
And he'll believe you. He'll believe you that he owes you change.
What if you did this? What if you go one degree, right? You say to the barman, say, hey, I'm going to come in later on with a group of my friends. Can I put a little wager on something with you? Maybe something you kind of know, right? So it wouldn't be too weird. Like, there's a bunch of barmen that would totally take a little wager of like 20 quid. And you say, I'm going to prepay for my round of drinks, right? But I'm going to show you a piece of magic. If I get it right, you have to buy me the same round again, or, you know, buy a round for the table. If I get it wrong, then you keep the change. Super simple. And also you can decide on what the round of drinks are. Yeah. So then don't forget, you do the exact same thing this time. You predict the drinks that he's chosen for the table, which is, don't forget, like, people feel bad doing wagers sometimes. I very rarely do them. But when somebody experiences a piece of magic, which is really entertaining and blows their mind, they don't feel so bad then, right? It's just like tipping a busker. So you perform the effect. Now he understands that he owes you a round of drinks. So you could say, so you sit down at the table and you say to the person, I've conditioned him now. This works. In fact, you can go and try it. Go up and just ask him for a round of drinks.
Yeah.
See if he'll... And now they go up and they try it, and he does. And maybe you say to him, look, just don't tell the boys we've got a wager going on. So now when he goes up and he goes, can I just get a round of drinks on the table? He goes, yeah, sure. And he goes, how much do I owe you? Nothing.
You've got to make sure that it's not a modern pub in any way, because you could accomplish a similar effect and they might think this is the method by just ordering on your phone.
Yeah, 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 that's true. Well, look, we have flown past that 45-minute timer. Unsurprisingly, this has been a creative beast of a jam, but we do have at least 3 audience questions, I believe. Is that right, Jake?
We do.
And Jake has said we have to answer the questions this week because we keep running out of time. So
you have to answer them, otherwise I'll be crucified in the DMs.
And you do look like Jesus, so I wouldn't put it past you.
True.
Okay, well, we're just going to quick fire go through them, maybe.
Let's go for it. Yeah, yeah.
Daniel Darrow said, yes, a question for the episode. As Adam recently put out a mentalism with cards project, what is your opinion on the place of playing cards in the mentalism world?
Is that question for me or about me?
No, it's both, I guess.
Universal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess my view is pretty public since the project is out there.
Yeah. Number one on Vanishing Ink for a little while as well, I believe.
It was, yeah.
Plug that project. Tell everyone the name.
Perplexions.
Yeah, boy.
Yeah. So it's
Adam Dadswell.
Yeah. So the 1914 were kind enough to put that out. So essentially, it's a series of card magic effects that just have a slightly more mental feel to them. So there's a good chance, you know, some of the stuff in there you may perform as magic now, but it's just framing some of those up in it with a more mental feel to them. So yeah, I'm really proud of some of the stuff that's on there. And I think, again, it's, I don't overdo the motivation or justification for having a deck of cards.
Yeah.
I think if you do, you just really start to dig yourself a hole. I think there's room for them. They're interesting items. Everyone knows what they are. They're made up of colors and shapes and letters and numbers. So you can, you know, you can use them in that way.
Yeah. I think from my kind of particular style of mentalism, playing cards sometimes makes sense anyway, just because they're derived from tarot cards. There's cartomancy. Exactly. There is a mystical element that can be used in mentalism, where playing cards are perfectly justifiable. There, it's an iconic. If you go up to someone and you talk about magic, they ask you to show them a card trick. I mean, but I do have a kind of belief that if there is a mentalism effect that involves playing cards, there shouldn't be any visible outwards proficiency with playing cards from the performer.
Yeah, so I mean to that point, I share on the project a couple of fairly casual, I don't know, I think I've showed you some of this stuff, Jake, but
yeah,
fairly casual style shuffles and mixes that really don't promote the idea of like skill.
Yeah,
with playing cards. And I think with regards to the audience and what they're experiencing, you don't want them to go, oh, well, he's clearly handled a deck of cards before. So, you know, I don't mind showing one of them on here now. And it goes really nice with your triumph, by the way, Lloyd. So yeah. I won't set it up like your triumph, but if I actually weave them face up, face down, so they are going to be face up, face down, like genuinely. But if this was set up for the triumph, so this thing is a completely full false deck mix.
Yeah.
So like that, you can do that with a regular deck just in order. But when it's already conditioned like a triumph, like for your one, it feels so much more impossible. Mm. Obviously, people who are listening to this won't know what I'm doing here, but it feels like it looks like a slop shuffle type thing. But you're actually there's a change in the mechanics of the way you take the cards to begin with. But that's on there, and I think again it kind of shows this idea of I'll just give these a bit of a mix, and it's like your language as well, saying I'm just going to give them a bit of a mix up.
Yeah. Yeah, no casino terminology.
Yeah. Table. Yeah, the much you can put into their hands, the better as well, I feel, when it comes to... But, you know, like, some great things came to mind. Not great things. Some curious things came to mind. You know, it's like, if people... I think there's it kind of goes hand in hand. You're kind of expected, in a way, to have some sort of mystical items on you. But there's a place for anything. You know, like Darren Brown counting grains of rice. If you were to ask us without seeing that routine, is there a place for grains of rice in mentalism? You'd say you are an idiot. But after watching that, you'd say, well, actually, there's a good argument for introducing grains of rice into mentalism based on this evidence, you know. Yeah. So yeah, I'm totally down for it, down for cards in mentalism.
And everything's a prop.
Yeah, everything can be a prop. If it's a button, grain of rice. If they go and pick up a football card and you tell them which card they're holding, you know, which football player they're holding, that's mentalism. Mm-hmm. And that the same experience as if they took a different card.
Awesome. I think that was the quickest we've ever answered a question.
It was the quickest question we've ever asked. And it's good because I'm starving hungry.
So, the wonderful Corey Harris asked a question.
Go check out Corey's YouTube channel as well. He does some great EDC videos. Like, what's his current EDC carry setup, but a bunch of other things. Really, really good videos.
Yeah, he has some great content. He asked, what effects that feel similar do you like to string together to create a false memory in the minds of the spectator? I always perform John Bannon's Dead Reckoning with Di Vernon's Rendezvous Force. They feel like similar effects, but just different enough to make the spectator mix bits and pieces from each when they try and recall what happened.
Oh, what an absolute legend.
Yeah, it's a really interesting question.
To answer. Dead Reckoning, if you've not seen it, is mind-blowing.
So good.
I think that, you know, anything that involves a thought of or freely named card at the start of a routine being carried on through is a good way to kind of make memory a hazier affair. If someone has named the card and then it's used in other effects. And it's the same with mentalism as well, I guess. If you gather information at a earlier stage in the routine that's then used, maybe you gather a similar piece of information a little bit later, but they're both revealed at different times.
I think the whole using an example. So in a moment we're going to try something with you. This one I'm going to ask you to do, I'm going to ask you to picture first of all the color of the card, then the suit, and then the value, which will land you on a specific playing card. For example, if we were doing this with you, what would you go for? you know, so it could be anything. And now we move into the effect here, and then later on, you know, I do this thing sometimes, say part of what I do is about reading people and getting information from people without you really knowing. The other thing I try and do is put ideas and thoughts into people's heads, and later on they'll swear that it was their free thought. For example, earlier I asked you to name a playing card, and you named and then, you know, doing something with that later. But for anybody who's joined the effect after that, you could just say, and you're just thinking of a card, or you can just start to twist some of the, the language a little bit. That's a really tough question.
Yeah, and the concept of blurring the lines between the tricks when they recall things is great. Yeah.
I've had situations where I do a signed angle zero, and then I do some TNR stuff, and I've often had people come back and think that the signed angle zero has then been restored signed, which is a trick you can do, but specifically the way that I do signed angle zero would not sort of be possible. I don't know.
Dude, no, so someone literally said it in the Ruskin last Blackpool.
What did they say?
They said Lloyd's lecture was dead good, wasn't it? I was like, yeah. And he said, what was it he did? Was it putting the corner back on the signed card?
Oh, yeah. People just mix the memories together.
I guess Corey's question, and I personally would definitely have to go and think about it more, is what are the points that we can put in play throughout an effect? Or what can you borrow from two or three effects that act as a bit of a catalyst for this whole miscalling, misremembering what's actually happened?
Effect specific examples are hard to think up on the spot.
There's one other thing I do, and I wrote it up actually on a flight to Italy. I only know that because I remember the name of the project, but it's not so much a linking of effect, but it can have a thread that goes throughout long term, and it's again to do with signatures. But it's much more impressive to see it, much more fooling to see it than for me to describe it, but whatever. Basically, it's an ACR, and I very rarely do ambitious card routines. I'm kind of against them in my old age. But you genuinely use a dupe for the first two or three phases, right? So it's ultra, ultra clean. And then you just have them sign the card and do one or two phases with it signed. No one remembers that it wasn't signed at the beginning because of the script that goes the way that I script it. It's like, I was like, oh, actually, do you want to sign it just in case you think it was like two cards? Like, yeah, perfect. Okay, now we'll carry on doing it. And then you do a couple of really nice final phases. And then if you want to, you could use that same concept of using a dupe card in a different effect, eventually having the same card, same as the two clubs, eventually signing that later on, but they remember it was signed throughout the entire thing, just because you're like, by the way, if you maybe you think that I've got like two of the same cards, so sign it and we'll carry on. And it's just that like nonchalant, it was even signed. When we think about it, like he did all this, I even signed the card, and
because really, of the,
they didn't till later on.
Because of the kind of fluid nature of how you move between coin effects, that'd be good for a coin effect. You know, the third trick in, have them sign it with the two previous ones used dupes.
Oh, yeah, that's really good.
There's less of a defined start and end for coin effects if you're quite good at the routine.
Yeah, very good point. What other ones are there? I know a good one is that people would confuse Wayne Houchin's thread and single needle. So they'd think that, you know those two tricks, and they'd think he pulled a needle and thread from the eye.
Yeah.
And they'd confuse the memories because they use the same props.
What's quite cool is if the strengths from one of those emphasizes the impossibility of the, like, so whatever they're thinking could be the method gets undone by the next thing, which basically demonstrates the fairness of that bit. And again, maybe you've got two similar tricks, but the methods undo each other, but they think they're experiencing the same thing.
Yeah. Or even, one involves some kind of gimmick, but with the first one doesn't. And you say, you know, you inspected the items.
Yeah.
There's a...
Let me just plug my laptop in, guys, as well. I'm just losing battery. Go for it. Carry on.
While you do that, there's just for any magicians out there, because this is quite a good fooler. There goes Adam's laptop. if anyone's seen... Bill Malone's, I think it's on the Loose series, Oh no, it's the, what, is it maybe the one he does with LNL? I don't know. One of the you know, incredible DVD sets. Check out his 21 card trick. He does the 21 card trick, like it's a three phase thing. And just what Adam was saying, that the methods cancel each other out, even to like magicians as well. And I'm not so sure about the creating a false memory part of it, but certainly the whole canceling each other, the methods out, because it's, you know, it does one thing in there. I won't spoil it, but I'm sure Corey's probably already seen it. But if anyone hasn't, it's, I think it's on YouTube. Go and search for Bill Malone's 21 card trick. It's so good. It's gold.
Yeah, gold. I'm sure Corey is quite the historian, so I think he's probably got some brilliant specific examples already in his head, but it's a really interesting question.
Methods that can tie, like, what was Adam saying? What are methods that would cancel each other out? Or not even like the methods, but the fact that you did them.
Yeah, yeah. Hmm. So what would be, there he is. Yeah. The boy's back.
No, I was listening, but my anyway.
Oh, so you heard what we
couldn't
said
about it, essentially. So, no, what I was saying was, so it was actually after the seeing Paul Brook recently lecture near us, and guy was with him called Caleb Wade. So I don't know if anyone knows Caleb, but he was saying one of the things that he tries to do in a lot of his work is answer the question that the audience could possibly be thinking right now as to how that was just achieved, and following up the next phase of their effect, completely disproving whatever they're thinking.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's that kind of thing. Like, can you combat, like you said then, Jake, about having a gimmick to begin with and then not, or not having a gimmick and then having a gimmick. Just, you know, using that as an advantage point. But I'm struggling to think of exact effects.
I'm
just trying to think what could we think of on the fly. Like, imagine doing like a holy wood effect, you know, where the card goes through the piece of wood, and then you also finish with it, instead of an omni deck, you finish with a block of wood in someone's hand. And somehow they think that the deck of cards had a card go through them, then it turned to deck of wood, or in the block of wood they were holding in their hands had the card go through it, and then, you know, I don't know, they were just there's so many similar objects appearing in routines that have random effects happening that they somehow merge them together. I don't know. Fantastic method. Maybe it's one of those questions. Sorry, where by just like, shut up, Siri. That us just like having this in the back of our heads will get us thinking to discover something.
I know we're on time as well, but I think it comes back to our earlier point around how do you think about this as an experience that has highs, it has lows, it has a bit of an arc to it. And I think that's what this is about really, which is about pulling the whole thing together and then having those moments of maybe misremembering the order of which things happened as well. So I think you're thinking about the holistic experience.
Because we haven't done it in a while as well, Lloyd, I think there should be a little bit of homework there, maybe see if we can think of anything.
I'm down for that.
And also homework for anyone who's listening or watching as well, because I want to see more people talk in the Facebook group.
So to specify, what are at least two effects, can't be singular, that you could perform that the audience would hopefully misremember what each effect was specifically, and then create a new memory of an effect that could not have taken place that happened. Fantastic, fantastic premise. Awesome. Let's get our third and final question in, because my stomach is about to crawl out of my mouth and eat my own head.
Three is the magic number. Third question from Chris James.
Love Chris.
Chris is great. And he asked, what technology would you love to see a huge advancement in so it could be used for magic? Which is quite an interesting question. It's probably hard to think off the top of your head about those ones as well, but I mean, straight away, magic already has its own kind of industry-specific version of the Internet of Things. You know, the interconnectivity that's with apps and software and stuff. Whenever there's a new release out and it says, oh, you know, it's backwards compatible with this piece of hardware or this piece of software, that gets me really excited, knowing that in about 10 years there's going to be a bunch of hardware and effects that can go well together. and they're built to go well together, and the features build up on top of each other. But in terms of, like, you know, cutting edge, bleeding edge technology, what is that? I mean,
I know for one.
Yeah, I know. I've got an idea for something, but go on.
Well, for me, it's battery power or power in compact size. I tried about 5 years ago to get a, well, actually, we talked about it earlier. You know, the Levitrons, like the floating deck displays and things.
Yeah.
See one over there.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man.
I love them. I'll tell you guys another story about from like 7 years ago about, I don't know. Right. But what I tried to get done was to build a Levitron into a pocket wallet that would sit in your pocket so you could sit down. And, you, and I know, I hate floating effects, by the way. I hate levitation effects. But I do think Levitrons are real magic, right? This is actually, they're flowing, regardless of the weather, right? It's actually flowing. What? I thought it would just be dope if you could just, like, you're sitting down casually at a coffee shop, you've got your wallet in your pocket, so it looks like you're just, you know, over your own legs, and you make a coin float.
Mm.
But to get that technology built and shrunk, so it's always been a pipe dream, but you know, the big, one of the biggest struggles was the power needed for it. So if I could do anything, because it'd be sick, right? You're sitting there, and suddenly, like, oh, watch this, guys, I'm going to make this float, and it's just, it, you know, oh, come on, play the game. I'm all about it. Nice. What about you, Adam?
Glitch in the Matrix. That's what I'd sell that as. You know, you can just sometimes you can just get the right light conditions that things look like they shouldn't be, or you know, I don't. Anyway, so the thing for me, I'm thinking is just like, you know, camera technology, and you know, imagine being able to zoom so far in that you can see like precise detail, so that you could. You could be afar from a group that you're going to perform for, and you could zoom all the way in. And someone could be like, I mean, it's creepy as hell, but someone could be someone could be on their phone, and you could like clock their wallpaper of their phone. You could, you know, get information about the group before you even go over to a group. So there's that. Although if that was a publicly known thing, then maybe it's not much of an effect. But then the other thing is like, and I know some of this technology kind of exists, but being able to take a photo and the technology to be able to depict what's in that photo and then being able to use that information to your advantage at some point later on. So I know there are apps and things that can do that kind of stuff, or being able to quickly build up banks and banks and banks of knowledge based on photos. That'd be interesting.
That'd be cool. Like, you took a photograph of the room and it
can photograph the room and then say to ID'd everyone, think of an item in the room or whatever it
is. I was thinking if it ID'd everyone and then got their Facebook info and told you their dates of birth.
Yeah. Unreal. So I guess there's, you know, a lot of potential in that space.
There is sensors being developed at the moment that are to do with things like the depth and the material that things are based on. So, you know, from a picture, you can tell like the exact material and composition of something. But along those lines as well, there's these like transmitters to do with sensors that are being worked into virtual reality in probably about, you know, 15-20 years, where you can make someone feel something that isn't there, like a specific material, the sensation. And augmented reality is only going to get better, whether it's just for apps, you know, overlays and things like that.
Wouldn't it be interesting for that kind of, when you say augmented reality there, but even just with AI in general, like, tell you what, Jake, since you put me onto like image generation through AI, anyway, but imagine if you could say to somebody,
I've never seen a cat with six tits before.
Mate, now you are. You needed that in your life.
Too less than I'm used to.
So the, imagine if like you could, you know, you could have a whole premise around, you know, AI is only getting better, you know, and they're saying now that AI is almost getting to a point where it's thinking for itself and it's being able to come up with images that we couldn't even come up with. And then you get them to generate a random image. And then when they search it, it is the image that they're imagining, or, you know, you can do some cool stuff with like AI generation.
Yeah.
Another
technology that I'd like to see be perfected is screen technology. For example, because like this is something I've always tried to do, and you can see some basic things. I won't allude to it too much, but there has been an example of something I did. But for example, on the worst example, right? the most bog standard uncreative example. So don't judge me on this lack of creativity. But if you had a deck of cards and it looked like a red back, but the screen, but then it was a screen,
yeah,
and it changes to a blue back.
Yeah.
Right. And obviously this, I mean, I did something like this on my YouTube. One of the first videos I posted, you could see I used a clear bicycle card and I had it sitting on my phone and it changed, but it'd be beautiful if it was built into a deck. And then obviously not using it for playing cards, because that's the obvious stuff.
Yeah.
But then you could use it in a lot more convincing ways. But that would be cool if the screen technology was good enough to be handheld by the audience.
Yeah. I'm excited to see, you know, in 5 or 10 years, 3D printing is going to be even more accessible than it already is.
Yeah,
man. And you know, a freely thought of object being constructed in your hands somehow is pretty cool.
Wow.
Well, yeah, because I think about, you know, if you went back maybe 10, 15 years, the idea of like portable mini printers probably wasn't really a thing. And I don't mean 3D printers, but now obviously we're in a world where you could print something on the fly on your person without anyone knowing. That's a real thing that now exists that didn't exist. So, you know, why can't the same for 3D printing happen?
Yeah.
That'd yeah, it's true. It's true. Honestly, Moore's law, isn't it? Technology evolves times 4, but decreases in size by 4 every year or whatever it is. Crazy. Yeah, I mean, like 30 years ago, people would have laughed at you if you said you could have recorded a video on your phone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, maybe, yeah, so everything can be done. But yeah, fascinating question. And it's the type of question that gets me thinking, you know, of what, because there's some stuff that which, you know, often being behind the scenes in the product side of stuff, especially when there's a lot of electronic products that are, you know, ongoing, it's not unusual to find technology that exists that hasn't been applied to magic, which can be applied to magic and practically be produced, where you go, Jesus, this is like future stuff and no one knows about it. Like, are you sure we can do this?
Yeah.
It blows my mind. So, you know, you never know what's already out there that just hasn't been explored in our realm yet.
Yeah, like those pens that Rich mentioned when I was trying to come up with something similar, and it was just already an existing product.
Yeah.
I listened to that the other day actually, but I was like, what are these pens? And I was like googling. I was like, oh my god. Yeah.
Dude, when I created Lux, I didn't think it was going to be possible. And the first things that I had written down was a little, like, mechanical flap that would switch between the two lights inside the thing. It was all going to be, like, little motors and stuff. Until I realized it actually, the first time I made it work was by using two different lights. And there were Christmas lights, was one of them, off the Christmas tree. I had a whole reel of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah, that's why I was in my kid's nursery because it was the darkest room in the house. So this kind of works. Oh my gosh. So it does work.
But, awesome.
Dude, this has been the most creative episode yet. I think it actually has been, Jake. What do you think?
But each episode just gets better and better, man.
Yeah. Adam, thank you so much for coming on the show.
No, it's been fun. It's gone in interesting directions. It's been fun.
Will you come back is the main question.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Hell yes, dude. Well, thank you all so much for tuning in. If you haven't done so already, please hit the subscribe button, whatever platform you're listening or watching on. Adam, give us a funny two-word phrase that if anybody is still here, lingering on at the end, they can comment to let us know they made it.
Cat hyphen six tits.
If you're still listening by this point, please comment down below at hyphen six tits.
It's not two words. Yeah.
I'm sure YouTube won't flag that.
It's too late. We've already started a swearing avalanche.
No.
It's only going downhill from now. But until next time, folks, we'll see you all next week. I've been Lloyd.
I've been Jake.
I've been Adam.
Yeah, dude. Sorry we left you. Caught you by surprise there. See everyone soon. Speak to you all soon. Bye, bye-bye.
Bye.